Right now, you are probably sitting somewhere perfectly safe. I mean, maybe you're on your couch in the living room, or, maybe you're in the driver's seat of your car, or just sitting at your desk with your headphones on.
Right, in a totally secure environment.
Exactly. There are no actual predators outside your door. The environment around you is physically secure. But if you pay close attention to your body, right in this exact moment, there is a very good chance your heart is beating just like a little too
Well,
fast.
absolutely.
Your jaw might be clenched, your breathing is probably shallow, your nervous system is basically operating as if you are actively being hunted through a forest.
Yeah, and it is really the defining physical sensation of our current era. I mean, we've engineered this world of unprecedented physical comfort, right? But we are walking around in a state of constant low-grade biological terror.
And that is exactly what we are going to figure out today. We are looking at a stack of sources that explain exactly how the modern world has broken our internal prediction systems, and more importantly, how we can actually fix them.
Yeah, it's crucial stuff.
It really is. We have a custom-tailored deep dive for you today, pulling from some incredibly dense and just revealing material. We've got the latest modern neuroscience. We've got hard macroeconomic data spanning 2025 and 2026.
Which is fascinating data, by the way.
So fascinating. Plus, we have deep dives into trauma-informed psychology, and we're even bringing in a very profound philosophical text called Fractal the Trilogy.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal synthesis of information.
Yeah.
Because, you can't understand the anxiety of the modern worker just by looking at psychology alone.
Right.
And you can't understand it just by looking at the economy. You really have to overlay the biology with the bank accounts and then sort of overlay that with the fundamental way we view reality itself.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because whether you are listening to this right now to prep for a corporate meeting on why your team's dynamics are suddenly so tense, or I don't know, you're just sitting in traffic trying to make sense of your own ambient anxiety, this directly impacts your biology.
It absolutely does.
Let's start with that central paradox, the invisible predator. Why does uncertainty hurt so much? And I don't mean that metaphorically. The sources make it very clear that uncertainty registers as a literal biological injury.
It does. And to understand why, we have to completely discard the way most of us were taught about how the human brain works.
Okay, how so?
Well, the traditional outdated view is that the brain is this reaction machine, right? You think of it like a tennis player waiting for a serve.
Like waiting for something to happen.
Exactly. The world hits a ball over the net. An event happens and your brain reacts to it. But modern neuroscience, which actually traces its roots back to some early psychoanalytic theories over a century ago, has proven that model entirely wrong.
Wow, really?
Yeah. The brain is not a reaction machine. It is fundamentally a prediction machine.
So it's not waiting for the serve. It's like trying to calculate exactly where the ball will land before the opponent even swings.
Precisely. And it does this because of its primary biological directive, which is a concept called allostasis.
Allostasis. Okay, let's break that down because I know homeostasis is a word people throw around a lot. The body trying to keep things balanced, like sweating when you're hot. How is allostasis different?
Right. So homeostasis is reactive. You get hot, you sweat to cool down. Allostasis is proactive. It is the efficient, anticipatory management of the body's energy resources.
Proactive. Got it.
Yeah, your brain is essentially this massive, highly stressed metabolic accountant. Its entire job is to make sure you have enough energy, glucose, cortisol, adrenaline, to survive whatever's going to happen 5 minutes from now, 5 hours from now, or 5 days from now.
So it's constantly trying to pre-fund the biological budget.
Exactly. Pre-fund is the perfect word. And to manage that energy budget effectively, the brain has to constantly run
Just
simulations.
constantly guessing.
Right. It takes incoming sensory input, what you are seeing, hearing, feeling, and combines it with your past memories, your inherent biases, and your established worldviews to guess what is going to happen next. It is projecting a hallucination of the immediate future and then checking to see if the real world matches that hallucination.
And when the world behaves the way we expect it to, like when the simulation actually matches reality.
Then the brain's internal models are validated. When reality aligns with the prediction, you get a neurochemical reward. You feel calm.
Because you didn't have to waste energy.
Exactly. Your energy is conserved because you didn't have to suddenly deploy emergency resources.
Right.
But when the world becomes chronically chaotic, the brain encounters massive and continuous prediction errors.
Prediction errors. Which really brings us to the mid-2020s. Because if there is one phrase to describe the reality of 2025 and 2026, it is massive prediction error.
Oh, without a doubt.
Everything we thought was stable is just volatile now. We've got sudden economic downturns, rapid technological shifts like AI totally upending entire industries, shifting social contracts. I mean, the rules are changing daily.
Right. And here is the biological so what that you really have to understand. The brain does not interpret these prediction errors as a fun intellectual puzzle.
It doesn't see it as a game.
No, it doesn't say, oh, the stock market is doing something interesting today. It interprets the inability to predict the future as a literal physical threat to your biological survival. If it can't predict the environment, it assumes it cannot protect the organism.
Wow. Okay, so it's like your brain is a highly advanced GPS system, and the modern world is a city where the roads are randomly rearranging themselves every 5 minutes.
I love that analogy.
Right. You type in your destination, say retire at 65 or have a stable career, and you start driving. But suddenly, the road you were on is just gone. The GPS screams rerouting. It recalculates. But before you can even make the turn, that new road vanishes too.
And it just keeps going.
Yeah. It's just screaming rerouting over and over again. And eventually the battery just dies.
That is a phenomenal analogy. And that dead battery is exactly what we are seeing on a macro societal level.
Right.
The collective battery is dying.
Yeah.
What's fascinating here is how the autonomic nervous system is recruited to manage this perceived threat when the prediction machine fails. Because your nervous system has different gears, it shifts into to try and save you.
Right, because normally nervous system regulation is supposed to be fluid, right? You face a stressor, say, a car swerves into your lane, you deal with it, your heart rate spikes, and then 20 minutes later, you go back to normal.
Clinically, yes. A healthy, regulated nervous system moves fluidly between activation and rest. It returns to a baseline of safety and social engagement after a threat passes.
But that's not happening right now.
No. Chronic exposure to global tension, ambiguous economic forecasts, and this endless news cycle prevents that return to baseline. We get stuck. And according to the sources, this dysregulation manifests in three distinct biological states.
Let's walk through those three states in detail so you, listening right now, can actually identify where you might be operating on a daily basis. What is the first state?
The first state is the optimal one. It is called the ventral vagal state. This is when you are fully regulated. You feel a baseline of safety.
Pretty calm state.
Right. In this state, your prefrontal cortex, the logical planning executive part of your brain is fully online. You have mental clarity, you are capable of empathy, and your social engagement system is active. You can process complex, nuanced information, and you feel an overarching sense of coherence.
So this is the state where you can sit down, have a difficult conversation with a partner without yelling, or calmly strategize a complex project at work. This is the goal. But what happens when the GPS starts screaming? When those prediction errors pile up.
Then you drop into the second state, which is sympathetic arousal. This is the classic fight or flight response.
Oh.
Yeah. Your amygdala, the brain's alarm bell, activates and totally overrides the prefrontal cortex. It dumps adrenaline and cortisol into your bloodstream. You experience intense anticipatory stress, hypervigilance, reactivity, irritability, and panic.
Everything just feels urgent.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything is an emergency. This is the state where you snap at your kids, where you send aggressive emails, and where we see behaviors like doom spending, which we will definitely explore in a minute.
It's a state of total mobilization. You have the energy to fight a bear, but you are just sitting in a cubicle reading an email about budget cuts.
Precisely. It's mismatched to the environment.
And what if that doesn't work?
Yeah.
What if the threat, like structural inflation or an AI takeover, is just too big to fight and too pervasive to run away from? What happens if that sympathetic state goes on for too long?
Then your nervous system hits the emergency brake. You drop into the third state, which is dorsal vagal shutdown.
Shutdown. That sounds bad.
It is hypoarousal. The threat is perceived as inescapable or overwhelmingly exhausting, so the system literally collapses into a freeze state. You see emotional numbness, social withdrawal, severe depression, dissociation, and what the sources refer to as economic paralysis.
Economic paralysis.
Yeah, your vagus nerve basically immobilizes you yeah. to conserve whatever tiny fraction of metabolic energy is left.
Man, so this is the person who can't even bring themselves to open their mail, right? They know they have bills, they know they need to update their resume, but they just lie on the couch staring at the ceiling because the system is completely powered down.
That's exactly it.
And the tragedy of 2026 is that because of the constant fear-based media cycle, people are just bouncing wildly between the second and third states. They wake up in a panic, sympathetic arousal, scroll the news, burn out by 2 p.m., and collapse into dorsal vagal shutdown. The parasympathetic system, the actual rest and digest brake pedal, never gets to engage.
Exactly. And for individuals with underlying developmental trauma or a history of systemic stress, this dysregulation becomes the default setting. The threat response runs continuously, even when the room is totally quiet.
Wow.
And the sources point to some truly alarming emerging neuroimaging research on how this is physically altering the human body, specifically pointing to conditions like POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
POTS, right. That's the condition where a person's heart rate just skyrockets simply from standing up, right? They get dizzy, their blood pressure fluctuates wildly. I feel like we are hearing about this everywhere lately.
You are, and the research in our stack explains why. This isn't just psychological. Chronic threat exposure leads to actual neuroplastic structural alterations in a part of the midbrain called the periaqueductal gray, or the PEG.
The PEG, what does that do?
The PEG is a highly sensitive hub responsible for coordinating cardiovascular, motor, and pain responses to threat. When the PEG fails to reset after prolonged unrelenting stress, it leaves the autonomic nervous system physically locked in a sustained escape mode.
Wait, hold on. I want to make sure I'm wrapping my head around this. You're saying that because the economy is confusing and the news is terrifying, people's literal brain structures are changing to the point where just standing up from a chair triggers a cardiac event because their brain thinks they're about to sprint away from a tiger.
That is precisely what is happening. It is not just in your head. It is in your brain tissue. You develop systemic autonomic rigidity. The flexibility of your nervous system is literally destroyed by chronic prediction errors.
Okay, so if the brain is short-circuiting because it can't predict the future, what exactly is feeding it such bad data? What is changing in the environment right now that is triggering these massive prediction errors? Because I want to move from the internal biology to the external reality.
We have to.
Let's look at the macroeconomic landscape of 2025 and 2026, because the data in these sources is absolutely staggering.
The macroeconomic landscape of the mid-2020s is fundamentally reshaping the collective human psyche. The environment itself has become the predator. The sources detail a pervasive phenomenon called inflation stress.
Right. And the source notes that while the really acute, dramatic inflationary spikes of the early 2020s, where like eggs were suddenly $10, have somewhat eased in certain sectors, the psychological damage is stubbornly persistent. It hasn't gone away just because inflation cooled a bit.
No, not at all.
The data shows that inflation stress continues to profoundly affect more than 75% of working age adults in the United States. 3/4 of the entire workforce.
And this maintains a highly statistically significant association with clinical anxiety and depression. We are not just talking about the annoyance of groceries being expensive. We are looking at structural, inescapable realities.
Like what?
Well, for instance, healthcare costs are projected to jump 10% in 2025 alone. When the sheer cost of biological survival, the ability to buy food, secure shelter, and access medicine becomes a daily cognitive burden, individuals are more than twice as likely to exhibit clinical depressive symptoms.
Because the worry isn't just a temporary cash flow problem anymore. The anxiety has metastasized. People are terrified about their long-term structural viability in the world.
Right.
They are looking at retirement planning and realizing the math just doesn't work. They are looking at compounding debt, geopolitical conflicts, threatening supply chains. It is a suffocating blanket of variables they cannot control.
And then, into that exact environment of profound financial vulnerability, you drop the rapid, aggressive integration of artificial intelligence into the white-collar workforce.
Job insecurity. Yeah, the numbers on this are wild and, frankly, deeply concerning. According to the data, 75% of professionals under the age of 25 and 65% of those aged 26 to 43 report feeling highly insecure about the longevity and stability of their careers due to AI and market shifts.
That is the vast majority of millennials and Gen Z.
Exactly.
Imagine the cognitive dissonance required to survive that. You are expected to log in every morning, be highly productive, show relentless enthusiasm for your company's goals, and be a perfectly regulated team player, while simultaneously processing the existential, highly probable threat of your imminent technological replacement.
It's impossible.
It is. That level of prolonged cognitive dissonance paralyzes the mind and erodes the human spirit.
Because a job in our society is rarely just a job, right? Yeah. It is the scaffolding of adult identity.
Yeah.
If you lose that job, you don't just lose a paycheck. You lose the health insurance that keeps your family safe. You lose paid leave. You lose social status.
You're completely unanchored.
Right. You are completely exposed to macroeconomic shocks without any buffer. The psychological burden of knowing you are that replaceable breeds a profound sense of learned helplessness.
It does. It makes it exceptionally difficult to envision a coherent, meaningful future, which, as we'll discuss later, is the exact thing your brain needs to feel safe.
Okay, but wait, I have to ask a genuinely naive question here, because I'm looking at this data and then I'm looking at the real world and there is a massive contradiction.
What do you mean?
Well, if everyone is so broke, if inflation is crushing 75% of the workforce and people are terrified about healthcare costs and AI taking their jobs, why is every nice restaurant packed on a Tuesday night? Why is everyone walking around with a brand new $40 insulated water bottle? Why are flights sold out? If people are terrified of going broke, why does the behavioral data show they are spending so much money on frivolous things?
That is the exact paradox of the modern consumer. And you are referring to a highly documented behavior called doom spending.
Doom spending. Okay, explain this to me. Because logically, if I think I'm going to get fired next month, I should be eating rice and beans and saving every penny. Why am I buying a $200 sweater online at midnight?
Because you are assuming the brain in that moment is operating logically from the ventral vagal state.
Oh.
It is not. It is entirely counterintuitive until you look at the underlying neurology. Doom spending currently engages roughly 20% of all Americans and up to 30% of Gen Z. It is clinically defined as purchasing behavior driven not by a genuine desire for the item, but by chronic ambient stress regarding the economy or global uncertainty.
So they aren't buying the sweater because they actually want the sweater. They don't even care about the sweater.
Not at all. The sweater is just a delivery mechanism for neurotransmitters. Doom spending is a maladaptive, fundamentally nihilistic coping mechanism.
Wow.
Think back to the brain in sympathetic arousal. It's panicking. The GPS is screaming. It is desperate for predictability, agency, and safety. It feels entirely out of control regarding the macro economy. But clicking buy now on an app, that is an action with a perfectly predictable outcome.
Ah, I click the button, the item arrives. Cause and effect.
Exactly. And when you execute that transaction, the brain gets a brief, potent dopaminergic hit. That rush of dopamine temporarily suppresses the chronic anxiety. It forces the nervous system to feel a fleeting sense of power and pleasure.
It's self-medicating.
It is a powerful, highly addictive reinforcement loop.
Mm-hmm.
The brain says, I was terrified about my job, I bought a sweater, took control of something, and I feel a tiny bit better.
But the math doesn't change. The threat is still there.
Right, the dopamine fades in hours, sometimes minutes, and the consequences are severe. The data in our sources highlights a terrifying statistic. Doom spenders carry an average of $3,580 more in credit card debt than comparable non-doom spenders in their demographic.
Oh, man, that's huge.
And despite spending all that money, they report absolutely no proportional increase in life satisfaction. So, ironically, the resulting debt drastically exacerbates the exact economic anxiety that triggered the behavior in the first place.
It's a snake eating its own tail. So how do you stop it? Because obviously you can't just tell someone, hey, stop buying things if they are fighting a literal biological addiction to the dopamine hits keeping them out of a panic attack.
Mere willpower is statistically useless here because you are fighting a primal neurobiological trigger. You have to interrupt the loop through a process of cognitive separation. The sources suggest a surprisingly simple but highly effective intervention, which is strict manual expense tracking.
Like writing down every purchase in a spreadsheet, why does that work?
Because it forces a neurological state change. When you doom spend, you are operating in the emotional reactive centers of the brain. When you force yourself to manually categorize and record a transaction, you force blood flow back to the prefrontal cortex, the logical math-doing part of your brain.
Oh, I see.
Engaging with the cold, hard reality of the transaction breaks the subconscious emotional dopamine loop. You are pulling yourself out of sympathetic arousal and forcing executive function to come back online.
That makes total sense. It's forcing the brain to look at the real numbers, not the emotional high. And this economic despair isn't just altering how we spend. It is fundamentally altering the trajectory of human life itself.
It really is.
I'm looking at the notes on family formation, and the 2025 American Family Survey indicates over 70% of Americans now view raising children as unaffordable. That is a 20-point jump in just one decade.
It is a demographic earthquake. For the first time in the survey's extensive history, structural financial constraints are cited as the primary reason for limiting family size, far outpacing personal preference, biological issues, or a lack of a suitable partner.
Wow.
The macroeconomy is literally rewriting the demographic future of the country. People are looking at the prediction errors of the world and deciding it is too unsafe to bring new life into it.
And it's also rewriting individual identity, particularly around gender roles. The 2025 State of American Men report highlights this beautifully. And just looking objectively at what the researchers found here, putting all politics completely aside, they tracked a direct correlation between this deep economic anxiety and a massive shift in social attitudes. And to be clear, we are just reporting on the study's findings here, not taking a stance.
Absolutely. We were just looking at the math. The data from the report is clear. Deep economic anxiety among men is highly correlated with rapidly deteriorating mental health. For generations, society has conditioned men to derive their primary sense of identity and self-worth from their ability to be financial providers.
Right.
When those external markers of success are systematically removed by macroeconomic forces, inflation, AI, wage stagnation, it creates a profound identity crisis.
The role they were promised is no longer available to them.
Right. And the report notes that this psychological crisis often externalizes. When people feel a loss of personal control, they seek rigid external control. The survey tracks how this identity loss translates into increased support for authoritarian governance and a very strict adherence to restrictive, rigid ideas about manhood.
Interesting.
It is an attempt to enforce predictability on a chaotic world.
So, an inability to secure a stable foothold in the economy translates into a feeling of societal obsolescence, which then spirals into political and social volatility. Again, just looking at the math of human behavior, it shows how macroeconomics bleeds into deeply personal psychology.
It is a profound assault on identity.
Yeah.
And that brings us to a layer of this that affects almost everyone on a daily basis.
Yeah.
We've seen how this dysregulation impacts wallets, careers, and individual identities. But how does this economic terror bleed into our living rooms? How does it affect our marriages, our partnerships, and our closest relationships?
Let's talk about the relational toll, because as you mentioned earlier, the human nervous system is deeply, fundamentally social. We don't just regulate ourselves in a vacuum. We regulate our nervous systems through each other.
Yes. The clinical term is co-regulation. This is vital to understand. Humans are not biologically designed to self-soothe in isolation indefinitely. We are mammals. We need the physical and emotional presence of safe, regulated others to bring our own nervous systems back to that ventral vagal state of safety.
Right, like a hug.
A hug, a calm tone of voice, a shared laugh. These are biological imperatives for nervous system reset. But chronic macroeconomic stress entirely eats up the emotional bandwidth required to provide this for each other.
So let's paint a picture of this. You come home from work on a Tuesday. You are terrified about an AI integration announcement at your company. You are worried about the grocery bill. You are locked in a sympathetic fight or flight state.
Yeah.
Your partner comes home and they are stressed about a medical bill. Neither of you has the capacity to be the anchor for the other.
Exactly. The relentless pursuit of basic survival consumes the metabolic energy that previous generations might have directed toward relational investment. Clinical research in our sources links chronic stress to impaired emotion regulation, increased interpersonal reactivity, and crucially decreased empathic accuracy.
Empathic accuracy, meaning you literally lose the ability to accurately read your partner's face or tone of voice.
Precisely. When you are in fight or flight, your brain interprets neutral stimuli as threatening. Your partner might just ask, "Did you take the trash out?" in a perfectly normal voice, but your dysregulated brain hears it as a profound criticism and an attack. You lose the ability to see them clearly.
And the financial strain specifically is a massive predictor of relationship failure, isn't it? The sources show that financial factors alone can predict 15% of the variance in total marital satisfaction.
They do. Couples under severe economic strain exhibit decreased positive communication and increased negative reciprocity.
Negative reciprocity being the spiral where if I snap at you, you don't de-escalate. You snap back twice as hard.
Right. It's an escalating loop of threat responses. And generalized anxiety sensitivity directly impairs mutual satisfaction and the ability to build consensus. You can't compromise on a budget or a parenting decision when both of your brains think you are fighting for your lives.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what does this relational fracture actually do to the physical body? Because the sources point out something truly mind-blowing about how we process this kind of pain.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we find that relational fracture isn't just psychologically sad. It isn't just an emotional bummer. It registers in the human body as literal tissue damage.
Tissue damage.
Yes. Chronic emotional neglect or severe relational conflict activates two very specific regions in the brain, the anterior cingulate cortex and the insula.
And those are the exact same regions responsible for processing physical somatic pain, right? Like burning your hand on a stove.
Yes. So when you come home totally dysregulated from unpredictable economic threats and your inability to connect safely leads to a vicious fight with your partner and you feel isolated and misunderstood, your body processes that emotional isolation with the exact same neurological signature as if you had just broken your leg.
Unbelievable.
It is acute physiological distress.
Yeah.
Your body reacts with inflammation and immune suppression just as it would to a physical trauma.
That is heavy. So we are walking around with the neurological equivalent of broken bones caused by a chaotic economy and the resulting fractured relationships.
Basically, yeah.
But here's the thing that really puzzles me. Given that we are all facing the exact same global chaos, we are all dealing with the same inflation data, the same AI threats, the same geopolitical news, why do some people completely collapse into that dorsal vagal freeze state while others seem to adapt, pivot, and keep moving forward?
That is the pivotal question of modern psychology.
Yeah.
Why does the exact same environment crush one person and galvanize another? The answer, according to the deep clinical research in our sources, lies in a psychological variable known as intolerance of uncertainty, or IU.
Intolerance of uncertainty. Okay, let's unpack this one.
IU is identified in the clinical sources as the transdiagnostic catalyst behind the massive psychological crisis of the late 2020s.
Wait, transdiagnostic catalyst is a heavy phrase. Does that basically mean it's the root cause or like the match that lets the fire for a whole bunch of different seemingly unrelated mental health struggles?
That is exactly what it means. Whether someone presents with generalized anxiety disorder, severe depression, OCD, or PTSD, the underlying engine driving the pathology is often a high intolerance of uncertainty. People with high IU experience severe, paralyzing distress and cognitive breakdown when faced with ambiguous, novel, or unpredictable situations.
They just freeze because the prediction machine can't compute an outcome, and they have absolutely zero tolerance for the unknown. If they don't know exactly what will happen, they assume the absolute worst.
Precisely. High IU acts as a bridge between a person's underlying vulnerabilities, like a genetic predisposition to high neuroticism, and their fear of catastrophic external events, like war or economic ruin. The inability to tolerate the unknown actually fractures the structure of the self, leading to highly disorganized thought patterns. They cannot function without a guarantee.
If you've ever found yourself scrolling WebMD at 2 a.m. because you have a mild headache and you are absolutely convinced it's a rare disease, or frantically checking your retirement portfolio 5 times an hour, even though you can't touch the money for 30 years, you are experiencing what the sources call high intolerance of uncertainty.
Exactly.
In fact, the sources mention cyberchondria as a major symptom of this, which is such a perfectly grim 2026 word.
Cyberchondria is a perfect modern manifestation of high IU. It is the incessant, compulsive, frantic, online searching for medical, economic, or social reassurance that simply does not exist.
You just keep Googling.
Yeah, people with high IU cannot stand the ambiguity of a mild physical symptom or a volatile stock market, so they search endlessly, trying to force the internet to give them certainty. But the internet algorithms are optimized for threat, so it only feeds the anxiety. They're trying to put out a fire with gasoline.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because the sources pivot right here in a major way. We spend so much time in medicine and psychology looking at what makes us sick. The pathology, the trauma, the intolerance of uncertainty. But the sources introduce an entirely different framework called the salutogenic model.
Yes, salutogenesis. It is a vital paradigm shift. Rather than focusing entirely on pathogenic factors, meaning what causes disease and how do we kill the disease, salutogenesis focuses on the origins of health, adaptability, and resilience.
I love this.
It asks, in a world that is objectively toxic and chaotic, why do some people thrive? How do we adapt instead of just merely surviving?
And the core construct of this model, the secret sauce of the people who survive chaos, is something called a sense of coherence, or SOC.
A sense of coherence is a global orientation to reality. It's the lens through which you perceive life. Individuals with a strong SOC demonstrate significantly greater emotional resilience, psychological stability, and actual physiological adaptability, even under extreme adverse conditions. It acts as a biological and psychological buffer against despair.
Let's break down the three pillars of SOC, because this is the foundation of the cure for the modern prediction machine. The first pillar is that life must be comprehensible.
Comprehensible means you have the deeply held cognitive belief that events are structured, predictable to some degree, and can be understood rather than being entirely random, chaotic, and inexplicable.
So it's making sense of things.
Yeah, even in the middle of a crisis, you can find a thread of logic or reason. You can say, okay, the economy is crashing because of X, Y, and Z variables, rather than just feeling like the universe is indiscriminately attacking you.
The second pillar is manageable.
This is behavioral. It's the belief that you actually have access to the resources necessary to meet the demands of the environment. And those resources can be internal, like your own coping mechanisms, skills, and emotional regulation, or they can be external, like a trusted support network, a good community, or financial savings. It is the core belief of, this is hard, but I have the tools to handle it.
And the third, which feels like the most profound one, is meaningful.
It is the motivational belief that the demands and challenges you face are worthy of your investment, your suffering, and your engagement. They aren't just meaningless, sadistic burdens. They have purpose. If you lose your job, but you view the struggle of finding a new one as a meaningful journey to better provide for your family, you will not collapse.
So if you have a strong sense of coherence, your world is comprehensible, manageable, and meaningful. But what if you don't have that? What if you are listening to this right now and thinking, my world makes no sense. I can't manage my bills. And this all feels completely meaningless. Are you just biologically boomed?
No. And that is the most crucial finding in the literature. SOC is not a fixed, immutable genetic trait. You aren't born with a permanent level of it. It's a highly trainable psychological muscle.
Oh, that's good news.
Now, it is true that populations facing intense systemic external stressors like severe poverty or war often have a lower baseline SOC simply because their environments are objectively unpredictable and unmanageable. But structured non-pharmacological interventions like mindfulness-based stress reduction, rigorous cognitive behavioral therapies, and community building have been empirically shown to significantly enhance SOC over time. Coherence is a cultivable skill.
To truly build this sense of coherence, though, the sources argue that psychology alone isn't going to cut it. We can't just CBT our way out of a global crisis. We need a fundamental shift in how we view reality itself. And this is where we turn to the ontological framework provided in the sources, the philosophical text, Fractal the Trilogy, and its companion, the Oracle 2.0.
This is a major leap, but a necessary one. This is where we transition from clinical psychology to a much broader ontology, the study of being. The modern Western mindset is heavily, almost exclusively, rooted in materialism. It believes the universe is a cold, mechanical system made of dead matter, and safety is achieved by dominating the variables. You accumulate wealth, you secure status, you ruthlessly predict outcomes to protect yourself.
You try to control everything. You build a bigger fortress.
Right. But as we are seeing in 2026, when geopolitical tensions rise beyond your control and economic algorithms fail and AI changes the rules, this illusion of control violently collapses. The fractal worldview offers a completely alternative paradigm.
Tell me about that.
In this worldview, reality is not a fixed, rigid material structure. It is an unfolding, dynamic field of probabilities. The text describes reality as a fractal projection emanating from a singular source of consciousness, filtering through the membrane of space-time.
Okay, that sounds incredibly esoteric. It sounds like something you'd hear at a meditation retreat, not in a discussion about macroeconomic stress. What does emanating from a singular source actually mean practically for the exhausted brain we've been talking about?
It flips our fundamental understanding of consciousness, which directly impacts our nervous system. In the materialist paradigm, consciousness is just a biological byproduct of the brain. The brain creates consciousness.
Right.
But in the fractal paradigm, the brain is not a creator. It is a receiver. It is a highly advanced biological tuning fork, translating the infinite non-local field of consciousness into a localized subjective human experience.
Like a radio picking up a signal. The radio doesn't create the music. It just tunes into a frequency that is already in the air.
Exactly. The text states it beautifully kind. Consciousness is not trapped inside the skull. It is non-local, everywhere, like light before it chooses a shape. In this paradigm, the frantic, exhausting search for absolute external security is a profound misunderstanding of existence. Reality collapses into tangible form only at the moment of observation and interaction.
And this brings in what the text calls the law of reflection, which basically says the outer world mirrors the inner state. Operating in a constant state of fear broadcasts a frequency of scarcity, which society then mechanically mirrors back to you. I want to read a specific quote from the source here because it grounds this woo-woo concept perfectly. It says, "What you see outside you is not outside. It is a projection of what is unspoken within."
It completely reframes our entire human struggle. We have spent centuries trying to force the mirror to smile instead of just smiling ourselves.
Right.
When a populace operates in chronic sympathetic arousal, fueled by doom-scrolling, political panic, and economic dread, they broadcast a collective frequency of threat. The macroeconomic and social structures inevitably, mathematically mirror that back. The text notes, "When you are angry, the world bristles. When you carry peace, chaos begins to lose its grip."
It's a complete paradigm shift. Because from the time we are kids, we are taught that control is the only way to be safe. Get good grades, get the good job, control your income, control your environment. But the text argues that control is actually an illusion, and a dangerous one.
Control is the ego's desperate, biologically exhausting attempt to freeze the fractal. It is a denial of the fundamental law of impermanence. The ego wants to halt the inevitable cycles of life and death, the economic booms and busts, the changing of relationships. It wants to nail everything to the floor. But the text notes, your purpose was never control. Your purpose is alignment.
So we have to move from seeking control to seeking coherence.
Coherence is flowing harmoniously with the unfolding of reality rather than fighting it. When your internal intention, your emotion, and your physical action resonate together without contradiction, the external field responds. You navigate the chaotic, unpredictable membrane of space-time, not by dominating it with force, but by being a grounded, anchored observer.
This highlights the vital difference between external security and inner security. External security is your stock portfolio. It's your job title. It's the geopolitical treaties keeping gas prices low. External security is entirely subject to entropy. It is guaranteed to eventually fail, change, or decay. But inner security, that is structural.
Inner security is ontological. It is the profound, quiet realization that you are not the transient, panicked thoughts of your mind. You are not the fluctuating, anxious emotions of your body. You are not your resume.
Yeah.
You are the witness. You are the pure awareness, the observer watching the storms of the economy rise and fall without being swept away by them.
Another great quote to highlight this, which I think is just a stunning piece of writing. It says, "You are not the storm of your thoughts. You are the sky behind them. The storms come and go. They rage. They dump rain. But the sky itself is never damaged by the storm."
Inner security is knowing that even if the external fractal collapses, even if you lose the job, even if the bank account drains the core awareness, the true you remains completely intact. You are not trapped inside the story of economic doom. You are the vast, silent space in which the story unfolds. You are the dreamer, not the dream.
Okay, so we have the philosophy, we have the neuroscience of the prediction machine, we have the macroeconomic data. But how do we actually do this? Because, as the sources explicitly warn, we cannot fall into spiritual bypassing or toxic positivity.
Absolutely not.
If someone is listening to this and their rent is due in 3 days and they don't have the money, telling them, hey, don't worry, you are just the sky behind the storm, is incredibly dismissive and unhelpful.
It is entirely unhelpful. And the text itself warns against this. It says, spiritual bypassing is the new illusion. The path is not away from form, it is through it. We cannot ignore the material world. We have to synthesize this deep internal regulation with highly practical, earthly, strategic action. And this synthesis is particularly vital right now in the context of our organizations, our teams, and our workplaces.
Let's talk about leadership in 2026. Because corporate well-being isn't just a nice HR perk anymore. It isn't a yoga class on Fridays. It is a core, non-negotiable determinant of enterprise performance.
Absolutely. The massive convergence of AI disruption, shifting demographics, and relentless economic volatility means that organizations must integrate psychological well-being into their actual operating models or they will fail. And the most critical asset a leader can cultivate right now is not strategy, it is psychological safety.
This brings us to Amy Edmondson's pioneering work on psychological safety, which I think we need to clarify is often deeply misunderstood in corporate environments as just being nice to everyone all the time and never criticizing anyone's ideas.
That is a massive misconception. Psychological safety is not about constant harmony, and it is certainly not about lowering standards.
Right.
Psychological safety is the shared belief among a team that the workplace is safe for interpersonal risk-taking. In tough economic times when people fear for their jobs, the natural biological reflex is to hide mistakes, hoard information, and operate purely in self-preservation. That leads to systemic burnout and catastrophic organizational failure. Psychological safety is about facilitating productive conflict without the fear of retribution.
You want your employees to feel safe enough to voice dissent, to point out a massive flaw in the CEO's plan, and to propose crazy, innovative solutions without worrying they are going to get fired for rocking the boat.
Yes. Leaders must act as regulatory anchors for their teams.
Yeah.
If a leader operates from a state of ego, panic, or fear of failure, they broadcast that anxiety through every email, every meeting, and every microexpression. They literally trigger sympathetic arousal in the nervous systems of their employees, which immediately kills creativity, complex problem solving, and trust. A regulated leader, conversely, provides a ventral vagal anchor that allows the entire collective to adapt to uncertainty with agility.
Okay, so how does a leader, or frankly, any individual sitting at home right now, become that regulatory anchor? How do we build this? The sources provide a highly practical framework to transition from a reactive posture of control to a proactive, unshakable state of coherence. It's called the Inner Security Map. It has 7 steps. Let's walk through this, not just as a list, but as a dynamic troubleshooting session. What is the actual biological first move when you are stuck in doom spending and dread? Step 1 is regulate the nervous system first.
The mechanism here is purely biological, and you cannot skip it. You simply cannot strategize complex, long-term plans to fix your life when your brain perceives an immediate physical threat to your survival. Your prefrontal cortex is offline.
Right, you're just panicking.
Before you look at your depleted portfolio, before you read the news, before you attempt a difficult conversation, you must utilize somatic practices to force a state change. Breathwork, physical grounding exercises, cold exposure, physical stillness. These are not just wellness fads. They are biological hacks to shift your vagus nerve from sympathetic arousal to ventral vagal safety. Stillness is the biological prerequisite for clear vision.
Step 2, separate danger from catastrophe. How do we do this practically when the news feels like a constant catastrophe?
This step is about cognitive delineation. The predictive brain naturally and unhelpfully projects worst-case scenarios based on volatile data. You get an ambiguous email from your boss, and your brain immediately projects being homeless.
Yep, the spiral.
You have to actively intervene and separate the objective present moment facts.
Arr.
I received an email asking for a meeting from the imagined future ruin I'm being fired. Recognizing that these catastrophic projections are just probabilistic thought forms, not objective reality, diffuses their paralyzing power over your nervous system.
Step 3, build practical resilience. This is where we bring the philosophy down to earth.
Exactly. This grounds the entire philosophy in reality. Inner security deeply honors the physical world. You must improve your practical baseline, increase your financial literacy, do the manual expense tracking we talked about to stop the dopamine loop of doom spending, and crucially, you must process your emotional pain without suppressing it.
Don't just ignore it.
Pain, anxiety, and grief are not permanent afflictions. They are biological messengers indicating a need for boundaries or a change in strategy. Listen to the messenger, but do not let it become your identity.
Step 4, strengthen trusted relationships. This goes back to what we discussed about co-regulation.
It targets the fundamental mammalian need for co-regulation. Chronic stress thrives in isolation. The hyper-competitive economic system wants you isolated and afraid. We must actively, intentionally invest in community and foster deep vulnerability with safe people. Emotional safety with others is the true structural antidote to systemic stress.
I love that.
And here is the secret. By offering undefended, calm presence to someone else who is stressed, you actually solidify your own inner foundation. You regulate yourself by regulating others.
Step 5, reduce fear-based info loops.
The internet acts as a massive, dysregulated collective nervous system. Algorithmic feeds are mathematically optimized for outrage and threat, because that is what captures human attention. If you do not curate your feed, you will be trapped in perpetual anticipatory stress. You must vigorously ruthlessly define your circle of control.
Turn off the news, basically.
Curate your information intake to preserve the mental bandwidth required to actually govern your immediate actionable environment, your family, your work, your local community.
Step 6, act from values, not panic.
When external milestones disappear when the promotion is gone, when the housing market is locked out, you need intrinsic anchors. Decisions driven by the panic of scarcity will inevitably lead to isolation and further suffering. But decisions rooted in your core, unshakable values like integrity, compassion, curiosity, or meaningful service generate that sense of coherence we discussed earlier. Acting on your values, even when you are losing financially, immunizes the human psyche against despair.
And finally, step 7, practice presence inside uncertainty.
This is the culmination of the entire framework. The highest evolution of the human mind is not the ability to predict the future perfectly. It is the capacity to embrace the unknown without terror.
Yeah.
Uncertainty is not a threat. It is the raw, unformed material of possibility. By remaining anchored in the present moment, acting as the silent, unshakable witness, you collapse the ego's illusion of time. You neutralize the anxiety of the future by realizing your only true power exists right now in this exact second.
So, what does this all mean? If we zoom out and look at everything we've covered in this deep dive today, the allostatic prediction machine breaking down, the dopamine loops of doom spending, the fractured relationships processing emotional isolation as physical tissue damage, and the profound shift to a fractal worldview, it all points to one incredibly empowering overarching theme.
It really does.
True security isn't the guarantee that nothing will change. You cannot lock the world in a box and force it to be safe. Entropy comes for everything. True security is the cultivated biological and spiritual capacity to remain coherent when everything changes. It is fundamentally an inside job.
It is entirely an inside job. And this raises an important question for you to consider as you move forward. If your brain is indeed a receiver and reality is a fractal reflection of your internal state, what frequency are you choosing to tune into the moment you put down your headphones today? Are you going to broadcast fear, scarcity, and panic to the mirror of the world? Or are you going to take a breath, anchor yourself as the sky behind the storm, and broadcast coherence?
A profound question to mull over. We've gone from the murky diagnostic waters of modern anxiety all the way down to the cellular level of how we process uncertainty. And we've realized that even though the world often feels like a predator chasing us while we sit safely on our couches, we actually hold the remote control to our own nervous systems. Thank you for joining us on this custom-tailored deep dive into this incredible source material. We encourage you to take a deep breath, regulate your nervous system, and step back out into the world.